welcome to the Catalyst Sessions. I'm Bill DeYoung. Getting ready to celebrate a weekend. What's a weekend? Not really the same, but it's Friday, so let's celebrate anyway. Tonight we're going to hear from St. Petersburg musical legend Pete Merrigan. He's from New Hampshire, but he arrived on Madeira Beach in 1974 and kind of never left. It's been more than 40 years since Merrigan and his New England buddy Pete Shackett, Pete and Repeat, remember that, they put together the very first Mad Beach Band, and they took over the beaches. Between Madeira Beach, Jones Pass, Treasure Island, and Sunset, man, you couldn't throw a rock without hitting a boisterous, beer-swilling crowd, rocking out and singing along with the Mad Beach Band. Those were heady days. I was there, and sometime in the distant future, I will bring up my own hazy memories of those times. But for now, please say hello to Pete Merrigan.
Hi, Bill. I had no idea that that was going to be your introduction, but boy, I couldn't speak a better introduction for this first song. It's called
Perfect. Yeah. Can we have it? Let's start with the song, man. Let's have it.
I used to have a little cottage down by the beach on the Treasure Island side of Jones Pass. It wasn't much to look at and it wasn't very big, just room enough for me and two cats. I had a waterbed that waddled way a waterbed would, and a funky little kitchen and a shower. But when the air conditioner I didn't dare to use, it blew a fuse every time I hit the power. The poles were simpler times, the paper was only a dime. And a pitcher of beer ran you about a buck and a quarter. We were invincible then, me and my curious friends, sitting on top of the world in simpler times. We used to play Skip's Bar out on Madeira Beach, sitting, picking, and making up songs. It was Shaq and me and TC made three, and then the red-headed reefer came along. Harry on the bass when he wasn't out with Jimmy really fired up the Mad Beach Band. It was wild, it was crazy, though it's all a little hazy. All in all, what I recall was it was grand. Those were simpler times. The paper was only a dime. We were never out of weed, more often we were drunk and out of order. But those were simpler times. Ours were such petty little crimes. And we were sitting on top of the world in simpler times. I stumbled home over to the keg and cork on a sunny Sunday afternoon. An old upright piano on the stage left was banging out a honky-tonk tune. I never heard nothing like it. It was something to behold. It was rocking. It was bluesy. It was hot. Kid blew in from Buffalo a week or maybe two ago, and we hired Storm and Norman on the spot. Cause those were simpler times. The paper was only a dime. And a pitcher of beer ran you about a buck and a quarter. We were invincible then, me and my curious friends, sitting on top of the world in simpler times. We were sitting on top of the world in simpler times.
You're breaking my heart, man. That's so good.
I couldn't have imagined when I wrote that song just a couple of years ago that simpler times now would mean times when we could all go to a baseball game or go to a bar and sit next to somebody and have a beer.
Or go to a Mexican restaurant. That's what I'm feeling. The yeah. loss. He said, you're going to give TC a run for his money playing that harp like that, man.
What's that?
You're going to give TC a run for his money.
Oh, yeah. No danger of TC losing his job in the Mad Beach Band. That's for sure.
Let me wind the clock back a little bit. Up in the great Northeast, you and Shackett had a pretty popular, I guess it was a rock and roll band, and you shared the stage with Aerosmith. Tell me that story. I think people like to hear that story.
Yeah, well, actually, We kind of grew up playing the same bars and clubs up there as Aerosmith. My relationship with those guys goes back to before they were Aerosmith. They Steven Tallarico, which was his name back then, Steven Tyler, used to come up from New York in summer in New Hampshire. His folks had a kind of a motel lodge kind of thing. It was more like little cabins you could rent.
Yeah. Motel.
But they ran that for years. And Steven would come up and bring these great bands up from New York City. And so we would all flock to see him at the barn, play with the Strangers was one of them. And I can't remember all his other early bands, but we were all kind of friends back in those days. I remember in 1968 or so, they told us, because of the hippie thing, if we wanted to swim in Lake Sunapee, we all had to wear bathing caps. And Steven stopped one day by his house and flagged us down and said, "Hey, I got this little lake here. You guys can come swim here. We don't have to wear bathing caps." So we go way back. But to get back to the band thing, Joe Perry and Tom Hamilton had a little trio called the Jam Band before Aerosmith. And my connection there is I was a drummer in those days, and their drummer, Dave Scott, had to go to summer school. So they asked me to sit in and play drums on a couple of gigs. Well, they were really just getting started, and they kind of sucked, you know. But it's not that they sucked. I hope Joe or Tom never watch this, but we all sucked in those days. Let me put it that way. What they were doing was really heavy metal stuff that, you know, kind of became Aerosmith. And they asked me if I wanted to stay on, and I said, "No, you know, I got my own band, and it's not really my cup of tea anyway."
You could be in the Hall of Fame right now, man.
No, that never would have happened, and I never look back on it with that kind of eye, because I know what I could do on drums, and I know what a demanding taskmaster Steven is, being a drummer himself.
Yeah. Well, you are frozen, man. I can't see you at all. What's going on here? I think maybe we lost Pete. Maybe he'll come back in. Well, I should tell you, in those days, if you were there, you'll remember. Or maybe you don't remember. Oh, he's back. Good. You don't want to hear my story. Hey, man. Thought I'd lost you. You drifted away for a minute.
Oh,
are you
sorry.
There?
Where did you lose me? What was the last thing?
I think I was saying something stupid about being in the Hall of Fame, and you said since Steven was a drummer.
Yeah,
and no. You were here, and I was starting to riff. Thanks for saving me.
I have no illusion of ever becoming the drummer in that band. It wasn't that kind of music. And I know Steven to be a really, really good drummer and a tough taskmaster. I was at a rehearsal, an Aerosmith rehearsal in Boston one time. We just walked in, Mario, my bass player, and I after a vocal lesson. And Steven was putting the guys through their paces on this groove he wanted. And Joey Kramer wasn't doing just what he wanted to do, wanted him to do on the drums. So Steven, stop, give me the sticks. So he sat down and played exactly what he wanted to, handed the sticks back to Joey Kramer and said, "Now do it like that." And so they played for a while longer, and he stopped them again and did the same thing. So he's a master, man. He knows exactly what he wants to hear and how he wants to hear it.
And, well, instead of putting up with that, you came to Florida. And what I remember is that you came down with a band that was gigging here. They kind of split up and you said, "I'm staying." What was it about that, you know, beachy lifestyle, the 70s and the beaches? And I can imagine it was a pretty easy decision, but can you remember, like, why? I like this, I'm staying.
Well, I had been in New England for way too many years.
Yeah,
so the temperature and the sunshine and the light, you just see the light. There's so much more of it down here than there was where I lived in New Hampshire. We lived on the backside of a mountain, so we would lose the sun at about 3:30 in the afternoon in the midwinter. So it was the warmth and the feel of being down here. One thing I remember is I had a motorcycle at the time, and I thought, I could ride my motorcycle 12 months a year down here. So that was an attraction. And the beaches and the women and the beer. And, it was just, it was a lifestyle I liked. So.
Well, I mean, we were all young and stupid. I'm a little younger than you, but I was probably just as stupid. Let's put it that way. I wanted to ask you about Harry Daly and how significant it was when he just moved into the neighborhood, I think. Let's remind folks, Harry Daly, who's not with us anymore, was the bass player in the Coral Reefer Band for many, many years and plays on all the classic Buffett records. And he moved, at least part-time, didn't he, to Madeira Beach? So how significant was he in what happened with Mad Beach Band?
He moved in. I remember Shackett and I were playing at Skip's one day, and Harry and two St. Pete women who, if I could remember their name, I probably shouldn't mention them anyway, but two of the local gals brought Harry in and introduced us. And he said that he had just moved with two of Jimmy's roadies to a place on the beach, just about directly across from where my little apartment was. Right away we became great friends. It was just a connection. Well, I think it wasn't me necessarily. Harry connected with people pretty quickly anyway. Uh-huh. But we really clicked as friends, and I invited him to come out to Clancy's to play with Shackett and me.
Yeah.
I said, we do about a half a dozen Buffett songs. We can do those. So we did all the Buffett songs we knew, and then Harry said, I probably know the rest of your stuff too. And so we just kept playing our regular stuff. He fell in like a cog that had been missing on the wheel, and all of a sudden it was there. So yeah, that was a huge attraction because, you know, Buffett was just really hitting his stride then. Margaritaville had just come out, and I don't think Margaritaville had come out then.
It was probably a little, maybe right around that time.
Yeah, it probably was right around then. Yeah, actually.
Yeah.
So he was huge, and ironically, that little pickup band that you mentioned. When I came back and landed here solo after that Captain Sam's Traveling Band broke up, I remember the club owner saying to me, when I tried playing solo, he said, yeah, you're good, but you need to learn some stuff by this new guy, Jimmy Buffett. And I said, I've never heard of him. And within a year and a half, a bass player was playing with me. So it was kind of a cool coincidence. But yeah, he lived just a few blocks down from Skip's bar on the beachside with Max Crabtree and Phil Holcomb, who roadies for Jimmy at the time. And things changed for us dramatically then. People just kind of is Jimmy Buffett's bass player. And then one night when we were walking down to the Keg and Cork to
I've lost you again. Are you still there?
Bill,
I'm here.
You can hear me.
Yeah. Well, you know, I just came back. You know, I was trying to do something sneaky, which you'll see in a minute because it would work. I hope you were talking for a while because I couldn't hear you or see you. And
carry on and sort of finish the story I was on.
Well, the logical thing was I was going to ask. I don't know if you got to the point where Buffett actually came into the Keg and Cork, and this was.
I'll tell you again in case it didn't record.
This was the height. This was Changes in Latitude, the height of his Buffettosity, if you will.
I agree. So I was saying, you know, people were coming out and saying, Jimmy Buffett's bass player. And one night walking down to the Keg and Cork with Harry during a break, his car pulled up and said, oh, it's Jimmy Buffett's bass player. And Jimmy said, I know that. I mean, Harry, I know that voice, and turned around and it was Buffett. And that was the night we invited him to come in and play. And he came in and sat in and played with us for over an hour.
He was really just, like we said, hitting his stride at that point. Let me see. I'm going to put a picture up behind me. This is what I was trying to do.
Oh, there you go.
Did that work? Can you see it?
Good. That's
so
cool.
Let me move. This is Clancy's, isn't it? Tom Gribben swears to me this is Clancy's. I don't remember, but...
That's me in the red and white shirt and the 12th Ovation.
And I'll go over here.
PC, of course, on the harmonica. Then in the background on the bass is Harry Daly on the bass with Pete's arm. Pete Shackett in the red shirt with his arm kind of crossing Harry's chest. So that's the lineup for that night.
Was this maybe before you had a drummer and Norman playing piano and all the others?
Yeah, I think that's in that space at Clancy's.
It was a tight space. That's what I remember about.
Yeah,
very tight space.
I don't think there is a drummer in that gap. We did use a drummer in that same space before, but it looks like there's not one there that
day. It's definitely a tight squeeze. There we are. You know what? This is why I miss having a director here, because I'm having to push these buttons. And if you went away, it was probably my fault. Hey, listen.
Well, you know, this whole thing that's happened has brought to the fore all these technologies that were there, but we barely used. So everybody's pretty used to this now. I'm not a Luddite, but I'm half a Luddite. I'm not very tech savvy at all.
Well, this is way over my head, but look, I got the photo up, even though my head keeps disappearing. Hey, Pete, I want to make a request here, if you still got your guitar handy, while we're at this point on the historical timeline. How about giving us a little Willie for president?
Oh, boy.
Just give us a chorus.
Okay.
I'll 1980 it was. This was the Carter-Reagan election, I think, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's right. I wrote this when Carter and Reagan were running. I could sing those old words. We kind of updated this song a little bit during each election just to keep it
tight. Oh, cool.
The central issues, you know, the working man's the one who's going to pay. They don't see me, you know.
So No.
Just for old time's sake, I'll do it as close to the original way I wrote it as I can remember.
Okay.
Uncle Sam is deep in debt, getting deeper. Still the working man's the one who's gone to pay. Years and years of politicians got us into this position. Don't you think there's got to be a better way? Let's make Willie Nelson president. Get the U.S. government on the road again. Back in gear. Washington, D.C. never did a thing for me. Let's put Willie in the White House next year. Then Attorney General Jennings, that'd be Waylon. He was still alive. And Treasury, we trust in Johnny Cash. Good vice presidents are few. Cast my vote for Emmy Lou. Let's put Willie in the White House next year. Oh, there'd be music and beer and square dancing. And a picnic on the 4th of July. Picking and grinning, sweet country women singing. Let's put Willie in the White House next year. Again, and it modulates and moves again.
Man, that does bring it back, I tell you.
You said you were going to surprise me. I haven't done that song in ages.
Oh, man. It makes me think of the Irish fries at Clancy's, you know, and those big plastic pitchers of beer. Hey, after a couple of years, the original band kind of blew up, and things kind of came to a head for everybody in their own personal way. And talk about, I guess, whatever you'd like to talk about, but it ended. And I wondered how you were able to pick it up and follow and make it through the 80s. You had some rough times.
Yeah, that was a tough period because there was we were starting to suffer the consequences of all the hard partying we've been doing for four mm-hmm. or 5 years. Me especially, I was drinking way too much. I became a little irresponsible on stage every now and then. You know, the audiences loved it. The more screwed up we got, the more. If I fell over backwards. And I think Harry fell over backwards in that picture. They loved it. They ate it up. But So besides that, drinking and drugging and everything kind of starting to take a toll on us, it happened that the economy was starting to tank at the same time, too. It was probably late 82 going into, probably late, I'm not talking 82. '83 we broke up. So we had a series of just bad financial things happen. We'd play a week at a gig. I remember we did a week up in the Panhandle. And at the end of the gig, the guy said, listen, all I've got tonight is this much cash. Can I write you a check for the rest? He said, yeah, sure, okay. We don't like that, but if that's what you got to do, that's what you got to do. Of course, the check bounced. The guy was no good for it. We lost that. There was a place in Largo. I don't remember the name of it, but it was owned by Denny McClain, the baseball player. And he loved us the first time we played there, so he booked us for 9 weeks, filled up 9 weeks of the calendar, and then promptly went out of business. And so that just kept happening and snowballing. And I was just getting so burned out, I said, hey, I got to get out of this band because I got to quit drinking, and I can't do it while the band is playing. I tried quit drinking and still playing with the Mad Beach Band. I got to where I was actually throwing shots over my shoulder because people were so insistent on me drinking. But
just to look, watch me, and they were gone.
Yeah.
So you took a couple of years off, and I know Shackett had moved away by then, so the band was different.
Well, Shackett was out doing his solo thing.
Yeah.
And, I didn't take 2 years off, though. I took some time off for, you know, personal growth and to get a hold on my drink.
Okay, yeah.
What I did was quit it. And then about 3 or 4 months later, Dave Williamson asked me if I would consider playing with him in a duo, if he did all the booking and all the things that were causing me great headaches in the band. So I said, sure. So Dave and I started playing, and then Harry was done with Buffett's band, so he played with us. We had this little trio called Spare Parts.
Spare Parts,
that was a lot of fun. We played a lot down at the Detroit downtown, at the Garden Restaurant, at the Detroit Hotel.
Yeah.
And eventually had a fiddle player, too, named Jason Thomas, I think. Anyway, that was fun. But then Dave decided to move back to Nashville. Harry wanted to do something else, and I decided to move back to New Hampshire to build a house on some land that had been in my family for many years, and it was time to either sell it or build. So I went up there and played solo for quite a while, and then after maybe 3 or 4 years after I'd been up there, Harry moved up, and we played as a duo in New Hampshire for like 89, 90, 91.
Oh, yeah?
And Harry moved back here, and I went to the islands, and boy, I could go on and on and on, and I just moved around a lot.
But you came back here eventually, and you've been playing solo around. Well, we'll get to the band in a minute, which is a great part of the story, but is Billy Stonecrab the only steady gig you have now, or do you play all around?
Well, I've played there so much.
Yeah.
Before this all came crashing down, I was playing there 4 nights a week. So occasionally I would play other places. If I got, you know, a good offer, I was playing out at the Paradise Grill. Asking me to play. So I played that every 6 weeks or so. But with 4 nights a week at Billy's, I'm not looking for a whole lot of other work. That's about all I can handle these days. But I always kept a foot in the door down here. I tried to. Even during those years when we're playing 90% of the year in New Hampshire, I'd been down here for a few weeks. And then my other warm weather fix was playing in the British Virgin Islands from 93 till about 2003.
That's nice.
10-year run down there at a place called The Last Resort in Portola. Gorgeous gig. The gig from heaven.
Yeah, so why are you back here? Why aren't you still down there playing the gig from heaven?
No, you can even get tired of paradise. And after 10 years, and it wasn't 10 solid years, it was probably anywhere from 6 weeks to 6 months a year down there for those 10 years. I just kind of ran the program out because I don't know. I was.
Did you ever play in St. Croix?
I never went to St. Croix. I spent a lot of time in St. John and St. Thomas, but I never went to St. Croix. I
know my wife lived in St. Croix for a few years right around that time. Would have been able to see it. Let's talk about the Manhattan Beach Band. You guys are still, Terry, of course, is not with us anymore. Norman Dusen, God rest his soul, isn't with us anymore. But you guys have reuned numerous times.
Yeah.
That's a verb.
Dave Williamson, Lenny Austin, Vinny Sapleski, T.C. Carr. And, did I get them all? I think I did. Dave, Lenny, T.C., Vinny. Oh, Tommy Kennedy on the drums.
Yeah, I was going to say Kennedy is, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, he was a Gribben find. Tom Gribben found Tommy Kennedy for the Saltwater Band.
He's a man of many talents, that guy. Yeah. So listen, how often do you... I'm sorry?
I was going to say, the Saltwater Band, which was your old band when I first and the Mad Beach Band are virtually interchangeable parts. You know?
Well, sometimes. And, you know, when I had to leave suddenly because of illness, I think they had a gig scheduled in Key West, and Harry filled in for me, which was great. And he was a nice guy. I was going to tell you something Harry said to me, and he said it to me several times. I didn't know him that well, but he said, you know, the reason I like you, Bill, he says, because when we first met, you looked me in the eye and said, you know, I don't really like Jimmy Buffett's music that much. I guess I had his grudging respect, but anyway. So the band.
Fun fact, kiddies, Harry was not a big Jimmy Buffett fan.
Oh, well, yeah. Well, I didn't know that, but I'm not surprised to hear it. You know, a gig's a gig, right?
Yeah.
When are you going to play again, the band? I mean, do we know when anybody's going to play again, in as much as?
For the last several years, we've been trying to carve out a Saturday night for the Hideaway, because we really love John Kelly and Nicole and the whole Hideaway vibe. It's just a wonderful place to play. So we'd like to do that sometime in the summer. And then... For 2 years now, we've done the Palladium sometime in November or December. We might do that again. And there's another big grand opening coming up that I don't want to talk about too much because I'm not sure of the status of it. But it's at one of the major venues in our area, and we might be involved in the opening of that. So we're really kind of playing less and enjoying it more at the Mad Beach Band. You know, we wait for things that are really special and we really want to do.
Older, wiser, and, you know, survivors in a way, right?
I'll tell you, though, every single time we get on stage, it's just a thrill to be playing with the likes of those guys. I'm just, I have to pinch myself and say I'm up here with pure genius. You know, every one of them, Kennedy, Dave, Vinny, T.C. and Lenny, they're just awesome people and awesome talents to play with.
I met T.C. before I met you guys. When I was at, here's a superfluous story that nobody cares about. When I was just out of high school, I worked at the St. Petersburg Times for a year as like an office boy. And that's when they let me start writing and all hell broke loose, you know. But Pete Gallagher and Buddy Martin had this, they were at the paper, they had this little side band called Greengrass Revival.
I remember it.
And that's where I met T.C. He was the harp player because T.C., God love him, you know, would play with, he plays with guys with great talent like you and Gribben and all those people. He also played with Buddy Martin, who was kind of about as good as I was in those days, which is to say not great. T.C. is the kind of guy who like make anybody sound good. That's what I mean.
That's true. You know, you mentioned my harmonica playing. Every once in a while when T.C.'s playing with me, I'll pick up a harp and we'll do this two harmonica thing. Mm-hmm. Everybody tells me after, man, you're really good on the harmonica. I said, no. That was T.C. making me sound good.
Making me sound good.
T.C. You know, it's like having Tiger Woods on your foursome team.
Oh, yeah. Well, you've made this show a pleasure, always. It's always great to talk to you, and we'll look forward to seeing you and the band, you know, on the other side of all this stuff.
Thanks, Bill. We sure will let our fans know when we got something together, and if there's any way, you know, a lot of people have suggested this, if we get facile enough with this technology, maybe we can do a Mad Beach Band show where we're all playing from our homes. I would love it if somebody knew how to do that.
I posted this thing on the Catalyst today where the Florida Orchestra did it. Two conductors and 38 musicians. That's 40 separate videos. And again, that's out of my pay grade. I don't know how they did it, but it was really, really cool. So maybe you can. That would be great.
Yeah.
So if you guys are watching who produced that for the orchestra, call Mr. Merrigan and let's make this happen.
Yeah,
that would
yeah.
be cool.
Send me an email.
Would you be kind enough to take us? I was going to ask you to take us out with the song, but you have something else.
Let me put in a little plug for my next Facebook Live show. I'm going to.
Yes, please do. Yes.
Make it a habit to play every Wednesday at about 5 o'clock. I did a Sunday last week too, and I'm not sure I want to do two a week, but at least Wednesdays I'll be doing some FaceTime.
And at what time?
Five o'clock on Wednesdays.
On Facebook.
Yeah.
Well, again, we're so happy that you joined us today, and
thanks, Bill. This has been fun.
And enjoy your weekend, such as it is, huh?
Yeah, is it the weekend? I'm like everybody.
Oh, it's Friday. Oh. All right, my friend, take us out.
Okay, let me, I'll play a song I wrote called Angels Sing in the Blues. It's not a real peppy tune, but it's one of my favorites and one that people seem to like. In walks man, nobody knows. Three-day old beer in its one suit of clothes. He asked for some water in a glass made for wine. Coin he laid down, bound to be his last dime. I once was a preacher, he said with a grin. Much religion is just one more sin. He drew back a swallow with a wink and a nod. He said, these days I'm feeling much closer to God. Now I've got nothing but these holes in my shoes. I tried giving up, but my spirit refuses when I'm down on my knees, searching for clues. I can almost hear angels singing the blues. People stop talking and listen instead. His eyes were wide open, and the last thing he said, doubt is a sea of worthless regret. Love is the lighthouse my sails are set. Now I've got nothing but these holes in my shoes. I tried giving up, but my spirit refuses. I'm down on my knees, searching for clues. I can almost hear angels singing in the blues. Well, you never know who's passing through. Stranger is really no stranger than you. Always more there than first meets the eyes. A prince is no less in a pauper's disguise. All out of nothing, holes in my shoes. I tried giving up, but my spirit refused. Since I'm down on my knees, searching for clues, I can almost hear angels sing blues. I swear I hear angels now sing blues.
Too good, man. Pete Merrigan from the Matt Beach Band.
Thanks,
Citizen
Billy.
Of the world, gentleman and a scholar. Thank you, brother. We'll see you again really soon.
Thank you. Be careful out there and don't forget to wash your hands.
Absolutely. Good night.
Good night.